Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, February 13th. I'm Ray Graff. Traveling through the snow and ice, our avian expert Rich Guthrie has landed in Studio A for today's show. So for this hour, let's let our mind drift with the wind to a spot where skies are clear and turkey vultures make lazy circles in the sky. Yeah, it's the bird show. That's a simple way to say it. Rich Guthrie is here to answer your bird questions, and the number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the number, or you can email your bird question to voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie and your birding questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds on the show today, and we welcome back our resident avian expert, Rich Guthrie, to answer your questions. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He is a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. Rich Guthrie is always a great guest. It's best to get your calls in now. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Rich Guthrie, welcome back, sir.
Hello, Ray. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you back here on the first post-fun drive Vox Pop, and you do that a lot, actually. You come in, you're usually the first guest we have after the fun drive.
There's a pattern to that. Yes, you're right.
You know, we had some bad weather over the last 24, 36 hours, and sleet and snow and in some places high winds. And we were sitting around last night by the fire, and my wife said, what do some of these birds do in this terrible, when it's sleeting and the ice is coming from the sky?
They all come down to my bird feeders.
They do not.
They were all there last night.
You can't fly when there's sleet, right?
Oh yeah, they do.
Really?
Yes.
How?
It's
like a plane. Don't your wings get iced?
Well, they flutter and shudder.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And so, but some just hunker down, right?
Some do, but for the most part, what they want to do, and the feeders were certainly evidence of that. They look for a supply of food. And this is where having the backyard bird feeders was a wonderful gift because they all came in. They all lined up.
Oh, really? Yesterday?
Oh, my gosh.
Really?
Yeah. And others. I've heard reports from around the region where other people were just inundated, swarmed with colorful birds, the cardinals and the house finches. Well, they're not quite colorful yet, but the goldfinches were there.
Any rare birds show up?
I'm hoping that somebody will have had a rare bird. This is when rare birds do show up.
When weather is bad?
When you get a bad storm like this and they're looking around and they see the crowd lined up at the in the bread line there, they say, hey, I'm in.
Now, birds, are they territorial? In other words, if there's a flock of bird X and an interloper, perhaps not from the region, different species flies in, will the other ones try to crowd out this particular bird?
Nope.
Really?
Nope. They may not get along well with their own kind, but they'll be side by side with somebody totally different.
That's very interesting. All right, Rich, the lines are loading up fast here at 800-348-2551. So let's go to the phones and Nicole in Nassau. Nicole, you're on.
Yes, hi.
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 My question is, last week I had a huge flock of robins come in. And yesterday in the snowstorm, I had a pair of bluebirds.
There you go.
And I'm wondering how unusual that is.
It is somewhat unusual. First of all, robins and bluebirds will overwinter in our area. Throughout much of the listening area, they will find themselves a quiet, out-of-the-way place where there's an ample supply of food. And hunker down. They just spend the winter in these little enclaves. And my guess is that you have some sort of fruit tree in your vicinity there, be it crabapple or grapes or sumac or something along those lines. And that's what they're looking for now, is leftover overwintering fruit.
Oh, okay. Well, they were just at my bird feeder.
Oh, really? Then they're usually not interested in bird seed. But it could have been that they were drawn in by the activity and tested it out, investigated, and probably didn't find what they were looking for and moved on.
Okay, but it's not considered too early for the robins to be back.
No, they're here. They've been here, some of them. Of course, the robin is a highly migratory bird, and many of the robins in the area left back in September and October. Mm. But then there are those that overwinter, and then we have the robins that come down from Canada and beyond, Alaska even.
Mm.
And work their way east, and this is it, baby. This is Miami.
Nicole, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. And let's go to Niall in High Falls. You're on.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was recently down in Texas and became enamored of a pretty aggressive, I guess considered a pesty bird called the great-tailed grackle.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many of these down there, I was really struck by just how many there were, that I could only assume that at some point their territory will grow. I guess I was wondering, is it possible that we would see that bird in such, large numbers, say, here in New York? I don't really know much about, migratory patterns of these super aggressive birds. So, I don't know. I'm just kind of curious. I'll take the answer off the air. Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Well, the grackle, there are several species of grackles in North America and Central America and the Caribbean. We have the three here. The common grackle, that's the one that's in our area during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Then there, along the coast, we have the boat-tail grackle. That back in the day was limited to the southeast coast from, let's say, Delaware down through Florida. Now they've are found well up into Connecticut. And
why are they called boat tail?
Well, you look at them and they have this long tail, that keel shaped, and that looks like the keel of a boat.
Okay.
And then next door to them, over in Louisiana to Texas and beyond, you have the great tail grackle. Look very much like the boat tail, but they're different species.
Different, yeah.
Now, they have not been recorded in New York, as far as I can recall. I don't believe they have. But they seem to be expanding their range northward, as so many other species, like their close cousin, the boat tail grackle, has. And so they may be next on a list of newcomers to New York. Now, they'll be spreading their coming up from the Mississippi Valley. So if they do show up, it'll probably be somewhere along the Great Lakes Plain, Lake Erie, Lake Ontario area.
Now, Niall mentioned that they are very aggressive. Is that true?
Well, I don't know about aggressive, but they certainly are assertive.
Yeah.
And just by the sheer numbers, they're very successful in terms of what it takes to be a successful animal in this world. And that is, they're adaptable. They reproduce, and they're very very numerous.
Yeah.
So,
are they forcing out other species down there?
Probably not.
No.
Probably not. They're rather restricted range or habitat. And although, then as many birds are, opportunistic.
Yeah.
If they see other bird nest unguarded with eggs in it, they'll help themselves to the eggs. But on the other hand, they are preyed upon by other nest robbers.
Hmm.
So it's a circle, and they're just part of it.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Mike in Albany. Mike, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a tree on my property that died 7-8 years ago, and it's becoming, it looks like, a good nesting tree for a bunch of birds, and I got to cut this down, and I just want to know the safest way of doing it, making sure there's nothing living in there, and do it in a certain season. So anyway,
that's a good question.
You get the point.
Okay.
Well, I get the picture. What I would do is now would be the time to go ahead and be aggressively going after that standing tree. I'm sorry that you will have to or choose to take it down, because you're right. They do make a perfect condominium for a lot of whole nesting bird species and animal species. So, but be it as it may.
Situation. It's in a dangerous situation. It's going to blow down one of these stores up on my road.
Yeah, I totally understand, and you got to do what you got to do. So now would be the time to do it. And I don't know how.
They'll fly out of there? They'll fly out if they're in there?
Absolutely. The first sound of a chainsaw hammering against the trunk, who's ever in there will be. There will be, at this stage, it's highly unlikely that there'll be any eggs or young in the nest.
So this would be a good time.
Now would be a good time. If you wait another month, the screech owl or the barred owl perhaps might start nesting, and you don't want that to happen.
So, okay, thanks for your advice.
Yeah,
thanks,
go get them.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551, and we do birds on this program once a month or so. Today is that day. And a couple of open lines. Soon there won't be any open lines, so call now. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. Rich Guthrie is our guest today. It's the Bird Show. Our number is 800-348-2551. And Rich, you have... Well, I guess it's the slow season now, but you have a few events.
Well, we're in the middle of the sort of the dead of winter. And
I noticed.
In more ways than one.
Yeah.
And but things are happening. Things are certainly happening out there. To prove a point, this weekend, all around the world, there'll be people participating in what's called the Great Backyard Bird Count.
Oh.
Yes, it starts on Friday and goes right through the weekend till Monday.
Yeah.
And what you can do is participate from your own backyard, or you can go to a favorite place and that might have better viewing opportunities than your yard, if that's limited, and log on and participate. The Great Backyard Bird Count.
So,
and
what do? You bring a laptop out with you, or?
Well, you can, or your smartphone, and you can download the Great Backyard Bird Count app.
Oh, there's an app.
There is.
Terrific.
There's an app for that. Or you could go online, just Google Great Backyard Bird Count. It'll come right up, and you can log in, set your own little site for that. Or, you know, there are groups that are sponsoring get-togethers for that. For example, the Mount Pleasant Library, the down in Pleasantville, New York, they'll be having a Great Backyard Bird Count event.
Yeah.
And that's where you can go and learn about the backyard birds. That will be on Friday coming up at the Mount Pleasant Library.
Huh.
And Ted Gilman from the Audubon Greenwich will be there talking about backyard birds and how to participate. Also, we can look for spring arrivals at this time. The turkey vultures and red-winged blackbirds are right on our doorstep. With the snow out there, I just want to mention one thing, that there's birds will be coming to the sides of the road in search of grit and open maybe a grass patch.
Sure.
So if you see them ahead of you in your car, just give them a beep of the horn. That'll startle them, get them to move out of the way because, you know, they're not anticipating the speed of a car coming down.
And the birds have good hearing?
Oh, they have excellent hearing. Okay. And it'll startle them enough that you're not waiting till the last minute for them to panic.
Right.
One thing is I'll be doing a program for the Allen Bird Club over in Springfield in Massachusetts on March 4th.
Okay.
It'll be about Cuba, the birds of Cuba. Cuba, birds, people, cars, and cigars. That'll be at the Springfield Museum of Science on March 4th at 7:30 in the evening. Just a couple of
Cigars?
Well, we'll talk about them.
You're talking? Oh, I see. You're not going to smoke cigars.
Well, you never know.
All right.
Probably a no-smoking zone there, so we'll keep it to talk.
All right.
So then just a couple of things. The Mearns Bird Club is organizing an eagle field trip on February 16th, check out the MearnsBirdClub.org, M-E-A-R-N-S, Bird Club. Hudson River Audubon Society will be going to the Elizabeth Morton National Wildlife Refuge in Shinnecock Inlet down on Long Island.
Oh, yeah.
That's on Saturday the 16th. Check out HRAS.org. That's Hudson River Audubon Society, HRAS.org. Now, the Morton Wildlife Sanctuary is a wonderful place where, you know, the chickadees and titmice come right out and if you have some peanuts or a sunflower seed, they'll land right on your hand.
Oh.
They're so accustomed to people being down there. And then owls. The John Burroughs Natural History Society will be doing a trip to look for owls in Galeville, New York, February 16th at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, right up until dusk.
Mm-hmm.
You can check out John Burroughs Natural History .org, jbnhs.org.
All right. That's a good list.
Yeah, and it's a good time to get out, you know, with people and learn, get involved in some of the basics and move on up as spring is coming.
Rich Guthrie is our guest, and we'll get back to the phones in a minute, Rich, but a couple of emails here have come in. This one's from Nancy in Queensbury. And Nancy writes, can you please tell me why turkeys walk in single file? Answer that, Guthrie.
Where they have their marching orders.
No, really?
Really. Well, it's basically following a trail. Especially when you have the case of snow where the one bird is breaking the trail and the others are following suit. When they're out in an open field, sometimes they do and sometimes they don't.
Ah.
And why they do is a good question.
So you have no answer for that?
Well, I like the idea that they're breaking the trail. Maybe, you know, they're just looking to make sure that there are no problems. If the guy in front got through okay, you're next.
The guy in front had the short straw and has to go in front this time. All right. Well, there you go, Nancy in Queensbury. This one's from Charles. Charles is in Deerfield, Massachusetts. Charles writes, I always feed the birds, and in the past, I would have dozens of songbirds, woodpeckers, doves. I even have crows and a half dozen squirrels. Since early December, they've all disappeared. Even with the snow cover, they're gone. Any ideas what happened?
Well, I'm surprised to hear that with the snow yesterday, they weren't there, because that's when they really show line up and look for backyard feeders.
Yeah.
So can only look at my other possibilities there may. Changes in the backyard environment that might have discouraged them from coming, habitat changes or feeder arrangement changes, or perhaps there's a feeder down the road that's offering them a better menu.
So it comes down to what's tastier?
Well, yeah, but I doubt that. You know, they make the rounds.
Squirrels aren't too picky.
No,
the squirrels aren't there either.
No, well, I suspect it has something to do with a change in the local environment. And it should be pretty obvious if you look around. It may be something conspicuous.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Our number is 800-348-2551, and Rich Guthrie is our guest. Valerie in Richmond. Valerie, you're on.
Hi there.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I have a kind of a goofy question, but we are going to be selling our property here in Richmond, just moving to a different property. And I've been feeding birds ever since we built the house. It's about 11 years, and I feed all year long. And I'm sort of worried. They're like my children when I leave here and the next homeowner perhaps won't feed them. I think I can continue to feed them through March. Not expecting to move until April 1st, but are these guys going to be okay? Should I be gradually doing something different to say, you know, the restaurant isn't going to be here for you anymore? Any advice?
Well, I would not worry about it at all. This happens every year, especially when we have folks that go south for the winter. They start feeding in October and November and December, and then after the new year, they head south to Florida for a few months. And the birds do fine. They will fan out and find other sources of food, either down the road where there may be another feeder, or they'll just have to resort for more natural food types. And I wouldn't be too overly concerned about it. And with luck, perhaps the new owners will be just as generous.
Okay, that would be great, because, boy, we have hundreds, so it's quite a fabulous entertainment. So,
and many
right,
of the...
Well, that's just-
Many of the wintering birds will go back to their normal summer behavior, either migrating back up north or just retreating to the woods. Many birds will do that.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call, Valerie, and have a safe move. Our number is 800-348-2551. Our guest is Rich Guthrie. And there we go. Judy in Woodstock. Judy, you're on.
Hi. Actually, I think you had a question like this before. I've had a feeder out there most years. This is the same feeder I used before, in the same location, the same food, which is one of those songbird mixes that have more good stuff in them, and then I use sometimes will do extra black oil seed or something like that, and there's nobody coming, and it's been like weeks.
Oh, my.
The food level's not going down.
Oh, my.
So.
Well, you know, earlier in the season, we were hearing reports like that, where people were saying the birds are not coming to their bird feeders, and I'm at a loss for a good explanation to why there's a mysterious disappearance when there really should be, not an abundance, but certainly a conspicuous presence of wild birds in the backyard. So
I've seen a couple of cardinals on the side of the house, but they're not by the feeder.
That's strange.
And of course, they're ground feeders, and the other birds usually scatter for them.
Yeah, and I'm going to assume that you're putting fresh seed out there. It's not old, last year's leftovers or anything.
Yeah, it's last year's leftovers.
Well, that may be.
But it's been in a closed container.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Buy a small bag of this year's bird seed and check it out. See if that makes a difference, especially with the cardinals.
How will they know? I mean, if they're not coming back.
You know what? That's a very good question. And I have a suspicion that birds can tell, if not, certainly not by sniffing, but by looking. And I think that there is a visual clue that birds can tell the difference between good and not so good food. This is what happens with berries on the bush.
And the birds don't sniff?
No.
Really? No sense of smell?
Nope.
Huh. Go figure.
Vultures, yeah. The rest of the world, no.
What do you recommend in the way of, you know, I used to do just cracked corn and oilseed, but if I buy a mix, what do you think is the best for around here?
Well, so far, those are the best. That's what I use, black oil and sunflower seed. But you can get the mixes from the better feed stores that might accommodate some of the other bird species. But for the most part, they all like black oil and or sunflower seed.
Okay.
And
And corn.
That's what I meant. Black
crack
oil
corn?
And cracked corn. Yes.
Yeah.
And you could also add some suet out there and thistle seed for the goldfinches and, with luck, maybe some red poles.
All right. Well, Judy, thanks for that one. Our number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to another Judy. This one is in Valencia. Hello, Judy.
Hi, Rich. Hi, Ray.
Hi.
Yes. This is a question about birds flocking together or not. A few days ago, I noticed this absolutely adorable, tiny, round, dark brown bird with a tail kind of going up in the air, a tiny thing, which I think, and then it came back again, and I think it might be a winter wren, but I never see another one. And there are birds where you only see one, and I think, is this the same bird that's been coming back every day? Whereas the black-capped chickadees, there are hundreds of them coming all the time. So what is it about some birds that are together like in a flock and other ones that seem to be individuals?
Well, you're right about that. And your description does sound like winter wren. Let's say it's a feisty little guy that has, as you say, it's a tiny brown bird with a tail that it pops up and hops around. It has this peculiar hopping fashion, not hopping in motion, but hopping up and down, sort of like jumping in place.
Right.
Yep.
And I've never seen it before. But anyway, I only see one. And every time I see it, I know it's the same one. So do these birds all live alone? I mean, what is it?
Well, yes, it's... winter wren, actually, despite the name, really is not usually found around here during the winter months. They nest to the north and in the higher elevations of Columbia, Rensselaer County, and the Catskill and Green Mountains. But they typically migrate south from New York City down through Florida, Georgia. Mm. So yours is an outlier, that one that has resisted moving as a hardy little bird. And he is likely alone. The rest of the flock left him behind. So,
I feel so bad for this little fellow.
Well, he's found good company in you, and likewise. So,
I must say, speaking of the woman who was asking about the seed mixes, I get my mixes at Agway, different mixes in Chatham, and I have never had a problem. They eat like. Eat me out of house and home. I don't know if it has to do with the freshness. I always vary the kinds of things. I always buy a little bit of extra this or that to mix with it. So I don't understand about the people who aren't getting the birds.
Well,
anyway,
there you go.
And thank you.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Thanks, Judy, for the
call. No. Go. You go.
Well, I'm going to, like I said, a reputable feed store mix is preferable than the supermarket or hardware store mix. For some reason, I don't. It can't be cost because this stuff is, you know, like chicken feed. It's just very inexpensive, mm-hmm. but they mix in this stuff that birds just simply don't prefer.
Interesting.
And. So, reputable food feed store mix, highly recommended.
Well, Judy does well going to Agway. There you go.
There you go.
That's how I feed my children. I go to Agway. Just get big truckloads of stuff.
Cracked corn and sunflowers.
There you go. The speaking of wrens, remember a couple of years ago you identified some wrens that had taken up a home under the patio roof at our house.
Yes,
and they come 2 years and they have their children and then they go away. My wife said, they're back. This was last week. Is that normal?
Well, they're year-round residents.
Are they?
You're speaking of the Carolina wren.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, Carolina wren.
You know I don't know birds.
Delightful little guys.
Yeah.
And they're actually significantly larger than the winter wren, which is a tiny little imp.
Yeah.
But the Carolina wren is medium size, or actually on the small to medium size songbird. Delightful song. And
very
what's nice about them is that they sing even in January.
Yeah, that's what really caught us off guard a little bit.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, yep.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Andy in Thurman. Andy?
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
This is my favorite show.
Wow.
So, what I wanted to ask Rich about is a sighting I think I had of a couple of golden eagles.
Mm-hmm.
My first question is, are they around here? I've seen bald-head eagles, but and then I'll tell you the situation.
Yes.
So are they
golden eagles?
Do they exist up here?
Yes, they do. In very, very small, low numbers, but they do. They are found here.
Okay, so I saw... I live on a dirt road. I saw a pair of them on the side of the road, surrounded by a bunch of ravens, and I scared them off twice with my vehicle, and the third time I spotted them, I slowed right down, and as they flew away from me, I could see the sun shining on their feathers, and they had real dark feathers like a buzzard would have, and then they had like flecks of a lighter tan color and then some ruddy red flecks in them. And when I looked at where they were, a couple of deer carcasses had been dropped off there, so that's what they were feeding on. And, you know, I was just wondering, I saw a profile because the last time, instead of scaring them off, you know, I stopped and got out of the car. So they only flew about 50 yards, and I walked up and I got a look at them, and the profile was a hooked beak. So do you think that's what I saw?
Well, I was with you all the way up until when you started describing them. And then I began to have my little suspicions. So, first of all, yes, golden eagles do occur in our area, and they are opportunistic. They will find, if they can, a deer carcass and keep coming back to it because it's easy pickings.
Sure.
And the ravens, notwithstanding, they know the score, too. So the problem is, though, that the description you gave doesn't fit golden eagle as much as it should. And there are other raptors that will do the same thing, such as the immature bald eagles will also feed on carcasses, and the other hawks, like the red-tailed hawk. Readily.
These guys stood about 3 feet tall.
Well, it sounds eagle size. The golden eagle, both adult and young, should be pretty much uniformly chocolate to dark brown, almost blackish in appearance. And in a good light, they will show a brownish color to them. But without the flecking here and there, they will show the young ones will have a tail that is white and black. With a strong band of black on the tip of the tail.
Mm.
But the thing about golden eagles at any distance and almost any light is they have a golden color mane, the back of the neck, the nape. There's a light golden brown color that stands out in almost any setting. That to me is what I look for, but there are other clues as well. So if you get a chance, grab a picture and Open up an eBird account. It's free. Post it on there, and I'll be glad to have a look at the picture.
So it's eBird.org?
eBird.org.
Is there a dash or anything
else?
Easy
to remember.
Yeah, it's easy to remember. No dashes, no, just one simple word, eBird. Made up word,
ebird.org.
Or you could send me an email at my email address. Happy to have that out. Is richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
Correcto.
All right, Andy, thanks for the call. We have to take a break here. Rich Guthrie is our guest, and we will be back with the home stretch of the program. We'll get to as many calls and emails as we can in a moment. Well, as often happens when Rich Guthrie is on, the lines are completely jammed. We have so many emails to get through. We have 5 emails, Rich, and we have a full bank of calls.
Okay.
So let us answer questions succinctly and quickly.
Uh-oh.
And let's try to move through these.
Uh-oh.
Okay?
Uh-oh.
All right, here we go. Ready?
Okay.
And the first email. This is from Carol in Elizabethville. Don't do that. I'm a big fan of the crows and ravens in my neighborhood and was wondering if there's any way I can feed them without attracting all kinds of other critters. I used to scatter dried dog food on my lawn for them, but ended up drawing stray cats and other animals that I would rather not encourage.
Well, I'm with you on that. And without that, I have no good answer for you because kind of food, but you're going to have unintended consequences.
All right. This one's from David in Cambridge. For years, I have saved excess pork and beef fat while cooking and freeze it. In the winter, I load the suet basket with this frozen fat, unrendered. Is this a bad thing? I seem to have more birds than ever.
No, that's not a bad thing. It's a good thing.
Okay.
Birds need the calories.
You're doing very well, Rich. Very well.
Well, keep it moving.
I can't believe you used to be a state worker. It's amazing. This is from Roxanne. I normally feed a variety of birds all winter, but this year a flock of doves has come to feed also. Being large birds, they eat a lot. They're depriving my cardinals, chickadees, finches, and other birds of a lot of seeds. Question. Someone suggested that if I stop feeding altogether for a certain period of time, the doves may leave and not return, whereas my regular birds would come back. Is this true?
No.
No? So keep feeding. What do you do then?
Hey, moving along.
Oh, come on, man. You can elaborate a bit.
Birds have good memories, and they will come back, in fact, year after year, even after a long absence.
Okay. This one is from, I was only kidding about the state
worker
thing. You know what? This one's from Elizabeth. There was a bluebird evaluating the boxes in my backyard here in West Sand Lake. This is a full 5 weeks earlier than I normally see here. Was this unusual, perhaps, or just maybe the sign of an early spring?
Right on time.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good time for them? So it's not a harbinger of an early spring?
No, not at all. They just happen to be an adventurous pair, and they could be looking for an overnight roost. Now is a good time, as soon as the snow melts and you get out there in the mud, is to clean out some of those old bird, those nest boxes.
All right, this one's from Tony, and then we'll get back to the phones. Tony writes, I live in New York City on the 18th floor near Riverside Park. I often see red-tailed hawks in the park, and today I saw one perched on a high fire escape across the street. Its chest seemed puffed out, with its feathers making it look almost like a penguin. It stayed there for at least an hour. Would it have been preening, or could it have just been the wind?
It probably chilly. Birds will fluff up when it's chilly, and it's probably just sitting there making the best of conserve heat.
That must be great on the 18th floor. You must see some great...
You know, red-tailed hawks have adapted very, very well in New York City.
I bet.
They're nesting in many of the, even the smaller city parks. And, of course, what they like is pigeons and rats.
Well, plenty of those.
They got their source.
Let's go to Ken in Stockbridge. Ken, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Good afternoon, Rich. Thank you so much for taking my call. Rich, I use the black oil sunflower seed and Niger and a couple of suets, and I get a real plethora of birds. I was just wondering, and Judy kind of stole my thunder here, what else I should put out to attract, like the robins or the bluebirds, a different selection of birds. My chickadees are wonderful. They actually stay on the bird feeder when I take it down to replenish it. They are so housebroken.
Aren't they delightful? Yes. And keep it up. You'll find that the chickadees are very trusting, very adaptable, and can be, quote, friendly. As for other birds, crack corn will work well, and suet. That should fill the needs for most all of the. And now, with regard to robins and bluebirds, the only thing I could suggest is perhaps some mealworms. And you could get mealworms just looking online. You could buy them at a pet supply store, or you could order them online. You can and start your own colony. They do well in a terrarium where you can have a little farm.
A little mealworm farm. All right.
And just a renewable source of live bird food. And the birds like it.
Very, very fine. Thanks so much, Rich. I appreciate it.
Yes,
Ken,
sir.
Thanks for the call. And let's go to Joan in the Mass Pike. Joan, you're driving, but you're on.
Yes, I am on. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Very, very, very enjoyable.
Well, thank you.
I just have a comment. We have bluebirds who winter in our yard. I live in central Connecticut. And what they eat in our yard is suet. They have taught themselves to cling to the suet basket. And they wait on the post for other birds to finish. They're a little timid sometimes, but they come just about daily. I think perhaps they're fledglings from last year's nests. But we have them just about every winter, and they're absolutely spectacular to see in the middle of a snowstorm.
Well, you are so lucky. And what you have is a couple of very smart bluebirds. Now, all birds will look and see. Say it again?
I was just going to say it was the female who discovered first how to do that.
Well,
they're
there
always
you go.
Smarter,
and I mean,
by
that,
the way.
Yeah, that says a lot, doesn't it? Yes. Well, I'm good at birds will watch one another and see who's doing what.
Yep.
And most of the time, they'll try something like a bird seed feeder and see that it's really not for them. But the ones that find the suet feeder, they're the lucky ones because they got themselves a real source of high protein.
That's great.
And you get some of the other birds, like the wrens.
Exactly right.
And warblers and woodpeckers and nuthatches, they all like suet, and they all learn from one another.
All right. Well, Joan, thank you very much for the call. We go now to John in Highland. John, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm wondering about the winter raptors that live in Coxsackie and Queemans in those grasslands, and how the development of large solar projects might affect them, and what you think good mitigation might be.
Interesting.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, that's a tough question because we really don't know the answers. And you're right on about that. There's a lot of concern out there about the effect of not so much the small scale solar projects, but the large solar, power plants.
In that they cover the ground?
Well, they're above the ground.
But is that taking away space? I mean, why would that be a problem?
Well, the birds that hunt in the fields during the winter like to have unobstructed courseways that they can go back and forth and search for voles in the field.
Yeah.
When you have obstructions in a way, they may not be able to do that unimpeded course. So, but on the other hand, those panels may provide habitat for more food source. There's so much out there that we don't know, and that's why the approach towards looking at these projects needs to take an open-minded and truly honest investigation. But we don't have the answers to those questions just yet.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, John.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Doug in Catskill. Doug, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have a question, but I wanted to comment first on a previous caller attracting ravens and crows. Just something that I do, and not everybody could do this probably, but I'm a deer hunter, so I after I'm done with the carcasses, I mount them, after I butcher them, I mount them to platforms about 6 feet off the ground, and I get crows, ravens, red-tailed hawks, all sorts of scavengers come in. But anyway, my question was regarding a woodpecker. I got a lot of suet feeders as well, and I get all the usual woodpeckers, hairy woodpeckers, downy woodpeckers. This year, I observed two birds that I'd never seen at a suet feeder before. Just wanted to get your thoughts on it. In December, January, I had a yellow-bellied sapsucker.
Mm-hmm.
That must
must have got left behind. You know, it didn't go with the rest of the flock or was slow, whatever. But recently, I've had two pileated woodpeckers, and I've never seen them at a feeder before, and they eat a lot of suet, I want to tell you.
Well, there you go. And this is just another case. First of all, the sapsucker is a type of woodpecker, as you know. And we're at the very northern edge of their overwinter range. So to have one or two in the whole region is not a surprise. Uh-huh. The further south you go into, let's say, lower Connecticut or the Hudson River Valley,
more common.
There'll be more. Mm-hmm. They too are watching the other birds, and they see the other birds successfully working the suet feeder. They're going to try and check it out. Pileated woodpeckers, or pileated woodpeckers, depending on where you're all from, will also check it out. But they're very skittish, and it takes a while before any of them become acclimated, accustomed to being around people so much. But they too, and they make a comical image, a huge woodpecker clinging to a tiny little suet feeder. With regard to the crows and ravens at the platform, gee whiz, send me an email. Let's work on that, because I'm always fascinated by, and there is a, I don't know if it's still up, but I'm sure there is a video cam out of Sweden or Norway where they've done that very same thing. And they put, and you could see the white-tailed eagle and golden eagles and ravens and crows in northern Sweden or northern, up in Lapland.
Sure.
Terrific. It's kind of a little gruesome, but it certainly is active.
What is your email address once again, Rich?
It's richardpguthrie@gmail.com. And, Doug, do send me a note, and we'll see if we can work together on that.
Thanks, Doug. And now we go over to line 8, Janet in Clifton Park. Janet, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A couple of other folks have talked about bluebirds. I live in Clifton Park on the my backyard is the nature preserve, the Vischer Ferry Nature Preserve. I've never seen bluebirds here, but this winter I had two of them at the feeder. I did put up a bluebird box last spring, and I had no takers. So I didn't know if there was a way to attract them to stay, to nest here.
Well, they have to find you, and then the habitat is an important consideration. I don't know the makeup. I know that the Vischer Ferry Nature and Historic Preserve there in Clifton Park, Saratoga County, New York, is a wonderful place for bluebirds. And years ago, some scout troop put up bluebird nest boxes, but they were the wrong dimensions. Uh-huh. I mean, it was a wonderful idea. I wish, but a little more information might have made a big difference. Mm-hmm. The size of the opening for a bluebird nest box is critical for the bluebirds. It has to be an inch and a half in diameter. Inch and a half?
Yeah, okay.
All right. I had bought one that was supposedly for that, but I should revisit that maybe.
Well, just take another
and
look at it.
They had said to also use mealworms, but I'm kind of confused of how do you set them out for them?
That's a good question.
On the ground or?
What I've done in the past is I put a little saucer out there, specifically only for the mealworms. But what happened? And then the birds get to learn that saucer means that there's mealworms. The other birds learn as well, and some of them are more assertive, aggressive, they get in there, they jump the line and up out there in front. By the time the bluebirds get the nerve to come around, the food's all gone.
Yeah.
So, that included the starlings and the robins, that I like very much, but they were not the invited guests.
Ah.
Okay. One other quick question. I have a lot of chickadees, but I'm curious the fact that they seem like they take one seed and fly away. Is that what they're doing? Could they possibly be eating one seed at a time?
Well,
coming back for one more?
Yeah, that's that's what they do. And it could be they all look alike, and it could be 2, 3, 5, 7, 10 chickadees, one after the other, mm-hmm. looking like one. And then the other thing that chickadees do is they'll, when there's an abundance of food, they'll grab some and hide it someplace and cache it away for harder times.
Oh.
All right, Janet, we have to move it along here, but thank you for the call. Let's quickly go over to Peter in Salem. Peter.
Yeah, hi, Rich. I'm looking for some advice. I live in the country, and my neighbor has decided she wants to raise chickens. She decided she wants to raise them free range. I have an old apple tree in my front yard that has, we've put 8 or 9 feeders on it. But every time I fill the feeder, my yard is inundated with chickens, and then my four dogs go absolutely insane.
Oh, boy.
I guess they see dinner in the yard. Is there any recommendation of what to put out there that the chickens don't like but the other birds do?
Well, you could raise the feeders, perhaps, you know, bring them up off the ground. And the other thing is put a chicken wire fence around them that the chickens may not be able to get around. They, you know, a good chicken can get over almost anything if it's not totally enclosed. But I empathize with you there. And, you know, yay for the free-range chickens. But so try raising the feeders up and less spillage, however you can manage it. Some of these feeders will have a catch tray underneath them so that if there is any spillage, it won't go all the way to the ground. So you got to cut off the supply of food. That's what they're after.
All right, Peter, thanks for the call. Now to Carl in Clifton Park. Carl, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
I have a couple questions regarding feeding also. One is, I have a thistle feeder. It's a large one. Probably shouldn't have gotten such a large one. But the birds don't go to it, and they haven't been going to it for quite a while. I have black oil sunflower and a couple other feeders and a couple suet feeders. I'm just curious about what the deal is, why they're not going to the thistle.
Well, the thing about thistle is that it's great when it works, but it, from what I can, the same thing has happened to me too, by the way. And what I can surmise is that the thistle seed or Niger seed, both the same, is that it gets stale quickly. It does not have good shelf life. And the birds will assiduously avoid any kind of stale seed, and thistle seed notwithstanding. Yeah. So, you know, I sympathize with you because it ain't cheap, and it's an awful waste of a lot of what seems to be good thistle seed. It's not that it's moldy or anything. It just seems to have lost its flavor.
Huh.
In the bedpost.
That's probably it.
Yeah.
The other quick one, I guess it doesn't matter how you concentrate your feeders in the yard, right?
No.
They're all together. I didn't get a plethora of birds in the bad weather, and the only thing I can think of, and that's happened lately, is there have been some hawks in the neighborhood in the trees.
Yeah, that will do it, too. You get a Cooper's hawk or a sharp-shinned hawk hanging around. But you know what? The birds, you know, the hawk will grab a bird. You know, too bad for the bird. Good for the hawk. And then the other birds realize right away, you know, threat is over. Let's go to lunch.
All right, Carl, thank you for that one. Now, Mary in Westford, I'm sorry, we only have about 20 seconds, so can you be very concise?
Thank you. I'm calling about flickers. We're thrilled to have our flickers. We haven't seen them in 30 years. All of a sudden, they're back. So could you talk about the flickers?
Well, flickers are a type of woodpecker. We're like the sapsucker at the fringe of their range. And congratulations. And they'll be back in the spring, sure.
Richard Guthrie, a splendidly efficient job here on the program tonight.
Well, of course.
Well done. And your email address once again?
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com and ebird.org.
Thank you, sir, for being here. And once again, thanks to everybody who pitched in during the fund drive. Great to be back to regular programming. Support comes from the Hyde Collection in Glens Falls, celebrating 60s America, proud, photogenic, and caught on film in Colorama from the George Eastman Museum, HydeCollection.org. North Shire Bookstore, presenting Emily Bernard, author of Black is the Body, Friday, February 22nd at 6 p.m., Manchester Center, Vermont, NorthShire.com. At Nine Pin Cider Works, Albany, featuring hard cider made from local apples, now serving pizza, light fare, beer, wine, and spirits in the tasting room, open Tuesday through Sunday, NinePinCider.com. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie for joining us. If you didn't make it through today, he'll be back. Trust me, he'll be back. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Thanks to Dina Salzman for answering the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, auto mechanic extraordinaire Gordon Fricke will be here to answer your car questions. That's tomorrow at 2 p.m. Right now, stand by for news.